I'm Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. Before we begin today's conversation, I want to take a moment to ask for your support. Independent conversations like this, thoughtful, long form, and grounded, only happen because listeners and viewers choose to support them. If you find value in the work, and I encourage you to visit lockedin.cash and become a supporter. Your support helps keep these conversations accessible, serious, and free from political theater. Across the country, people are asking difficult questions about power, authority, the military, and democracy itself. My guest is retired Brigadier General J.R. Gorham of the North Carolina National Guard, a career military leader and current local official. This conversation is not about outrage. It's about understanding where the lines are and why they matter. General Gorham, thank you for locking in with me, man. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Adjutant. I'm glad you allowed me to be a part of your show today.
Well, man, you've been teasing them all week, man. They've been anticipating you since Monday, I think. So this is going to be a great conversation.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be retired, but my schedule sometimes, you know, become very hectic at the last moment and whatnot. So I apologize for not having the accessibility that we initially thought we would have. But lo and behold, you know, we're finally here, and hopefully we'll have a very informative show today.
We will. And I appreciate your time and just your friendship. And also, I appreciate your service. I always like to say that when I get an opportunity to see you. You know, General Gorham, when you look at the current moment, politically, socially, globally, you know, do you believe the United States is experiencing a period of genuine instability? Or do you think maybe people just have a heightened perception of it?
To me, it appears that we're in a very unstable position, one that I've never experienced in my lifetime, to see all the things that's being done, you know, from a, national and world perspective. There seems to be a whole lot of unrest, a lot of anxiety from a lot of people here in the United States and worldwide. And I'm really, really concerned. Not so much for myself, but for my children and the generation to come, because I'm a little bit concerned about the trajectory of our country and our world as a whole.
You know, I guess, General, go a little bit further on that. Share some of those concerns with us. I mean, you've seen a lot. You've been in the theater of war, as you describe it. I mean, you've seen a whole lot throughout your career and your lifetime. Yeah. What are some of those concerns that might be worrying you right now?
Well, the first concern is the thought that the leader of our country is trying to assume the leadership of another country. You know, it seems like he's overstepping the desires of the people of that country in Venezuela and whatnot. That's a concern of mine. Secondly, what's going on in Greenland, you know, wanted to understand the strategic concern and the safety that the president is, sworn to, you know, make sure that we are safe and that type of thing. But the way that it's being done is a little bit concerning to me. I would think that we should be able to solve these issues with diplomacy and not with forces, getting our military and things of that nature involved, because it seems like that might be the path that we will take. Because I don't, when I hear the President of the United States say something, I don't think it is just rhetoric, because it's just, his track record has proven that that's not the case, you know. And so I have some very concerns about our current administration and where these things are being done. And then the final thing is, you know, what's taking place in Minnesota. And that is very concerning to me. I fear that, you know, we might be taking a path that we have never taken before. It seems like we are going down a road that might possibly, and I hope not, lead to martial law and maybe not having a campaign, in 2026. That's concerning to me.
You know, I tell you one thing I'm concerned about. I don't know if this administration understands geography. You know, the other day the president said he wanted Greenland because no way that we could have Russia as a neighbor. He might want to go visit Alaska and stand there and look out because I they're already a neighbor. whether we realize that or not, but
absolutely.
You know, all jokes aside, General, and I think we have to laugh right now to keep from crying. But
I agree.
You know, try to pause for a moment and rewind within your mind to when you were a young recruit just coming into the service. And my question is in this line. I'm thinking about all the young service members that are part of the various branches of the military that might be watching what we've seen in Venezuela, what could be occurring in Greenland, the rhetoric that's coming out of the White House. As a young recruit, how do you receive that? I mean, what are you being taught as a young recruit when you're hearing this type of divisive rhetoric?
Well, you got to understand, when I came in 1974, you know, I was a Vietnam era veteran, you know, and the military was not looked on very favorably at that time. You know, there was a lot of unrest. There was a lot of problems with discipline and things of that nature that I observed in the military for the 3 years that I was in for the active duty. And then when I got back home to the National Guard, I saw it there too. And so, you know, a lot of the things that I thought were true, you know, based on what I knew then and based on what I'm seeing now, it is so totally, in my eyes, inappropriate. You know, some of the things that's going on in the military, I mean, I recall very vividly when the Secretary of Defense called all the leaders together and reprimanded them, you know, in public. That is a definite no-no in the military, you know. And to see that take place on the national stage and whatnot, I could just imagine, you know, the concern that new recruits coming into the military, you know, thought of that exhibition, you know, on national television and whatnot. And then knowing who to trust and who not to trust in leadership has been very, very concerning for me, being that I, you know, spent 4 years as a general officer, you know, at that level and whatnot, and then seeing what is taking place in our military right now, very concerning to me.
You know, General, let's go to the other side of that, because I'm also curious what some of the command staff might be thinking right now. And how do you, you know, how do you guide these young service members in the midst of the chaos and the confusion that we're seeing right now? You've been in the highest degrees of command. Mm-hmm. How do you manage that position in the midst of what's going on right now?
It's a very delicate balancing act, you know, when you're at that level, trying to balance politics, you know, with, you know, the military ethos of, you know, accomplishing the mission and taking care of your soldiers at the same time. You know, it's a balancing act, you know, and, you know, I've seen, you know, what I've seen was, you know, military leaders at the very highest level being, you know, removed from their command for no reason at all, except from my perspective of a political situation. They're doing a job and they're doing a job well, but because it doesn't fit the, the profiles of certain people in leadership, you know, they want to come in and just completely remove these folks. And we're taking a lot of institutional knowledge away from our military. You know, when you have that kind of reduction, and it sends a bad signal to our lower ranking people, you know, in our military, and it could probably have some second and third effects as far as recruitment of new recruits coming in at the enlisted rank as well as the officer rank. So when I see this type of confusion, I call it, going on in our military, you know, it could possibly cause, you know, folks who were planning on joining the military to have pause to see, you know, do I really want to be involved with something like that? Because there's so much uncertainty, it appears, you know, at even at the highest level, you know, of our military.
You know, General, a moment ago, you mentioned the word martial law. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, I've lived my entire life without seeing that happen in any American city. And I've only saw it in documentaries. I've only read about it. I've only studied it. But, you know, I tell you, I try not to have the same fears. My daughter and I are having a lot of conversations right now because we're not in the same city. So you just never know what's going to happen in a different city.
Right.
You talk about martial law and you talk about maybe, and you're a retired brigadier general in the North Carolina National Guard. When you started talking about mobilizing the National Guard to American cities, I mean, first of all, is it constitutional? Is it ethical? And what are the unintended consequences, General, when we start to turn our troops on our own citizens?
I mean, that is a very, very delicate thing, you know, because, you know, like in the National Guard are made up, you know, of citizen soldiers, people from the community, you know, and then to have to come in and police your neighbor, you know, that is that's very concerning to me. You know, like I said, I've never experienced it myself, you know, and for that to happen in our country, it could be really, really a bad situation because, you know, the world has its eyes on us. You know, we're the world leaders, you know, and then they see all of this type of activity going on, could possibly be going on in our country that has, you know, that's the kind of stuff that goes on in these third world countries and other places, not the United States. But then to see that, right, you know, see that divisiveness and whatnot, that could be a really, a strategic opportunity for other nations like Russia and China to come in and take advantage of the divisiveness that we have in our country, you know. And so, like, again, I said again, those types of things are very concerning when you have military coming in and policing our citizens. That's a bad thing, I do believe.
And I think our adversaries, being Russia, China, North Korea, and several others that may not make it known to us that they're our adversaries, I think they're already taking advantage of the divisiveness. They're doing it through Facebook and Instagram and TikTok, and they've got all of us, you know, neighbors are arguing with neighbors, and we don't like each other. And I've seen a tremendous amount of expanded divisiveness, especially over the last, I'd say, 7 or 8 years here in this country. You know, General, typically the National Guard is used for things like storm recovery and responding to natural disasters, you know, within our state. Is the National Guard equipped to actually take over Minneapolis? And if they were to take over or become president of Minneapolis, what does that deployment actually look like?
It's a well thought out process. You know, we're going to, plan it out, think it through. But the only thing that concerns me is, like many wars, we have a great plan of how we're going to come in and do things, right? But then we don't plan as well how we're going to disengage from that situation. You know, once you've come on and you've made peace and everything's gone, how do you effectively, you know, withdraw and deal with the repercussions of what has happened as a result of the activity that went on you know, to squelch that resistance and whatnot. There's going to be a lot of second and third effects from that type of activities in our communities, you know. But the National Guard, you know, we train for, you know, those types of situations more so than regular Army does, you know. And so we're probably, we're not as, you know, as well as equipped as maybe our police, you know, forces out there, because they deal with it on a daily basis here. But we do have training, you know, to prepare us for those types of situations, you know, and we do it very effectively when we're called on to do it. You know, like I said, we got one of the best armies, you know, the best army, you know, in the world, you know. And so training is very, very important, and planning, you know, how we're going to execute. We're pretty good at that.
If this was to occur, could American cities like a Minneapolis, could they be under a curfew? Like everybody's got to be in the house by 9 o'clock? I mean, is that possible?
It's very well possible. I mean, in our current administration, you know, a lot of things that we, you know, never thought about would be happening in our lifetime. We're seeing things that is causing us, you know, pause and causing us to be concerned. So I'm not saying that, you know, anything is possible in this day and time. You know? Yeah.
You know, we've talked about the role of the Guard and some of the things that are happening in American cities. You know, it feels like the Guard is being called on for everything nowadays. And, you know, there's a little bit of mission creep here, if you ask me, because beyond the conversation we've already had up until this point, you know, the Guard is being called on to enforce immigration now in certain American cities. I mean, have you ever seen any type of expansion in the use of the Guard in your entire military career?
I've never seen the Guard used in my military career as it's being used now, you know. At the borders, yes, but not in our cities. I've never seen it to this extent. And I just have a lot of concern about why we're doing it, you know, and doing it the way that we are doing it.
Well, then, General, like, okay, so with your, when you were more active and here with the North Carolina National Guard, if the federal administration is pulling the Guard to all these various cities across the country, talk to us a little bit about what that means for North Carolina. If we were to experience a pretty bad storm or a natural disaster, what does that mean if our Guard is located all over the country doing other things on behalf of the administration?
Well, we've had to, you know, divert some forces back to North Carolina. I mean, we're not going to deploy all our people, you know, to these cities and whatnot. There's going to be quite a few of the soldiers still left behind. And so we will have to organize and use those soldiers and put them on state active duty so that we can handle the crisis here in the state. You know, because, you know, the National Guard, we have two missions. We have a state mission and then we have a federal mission. When we're on state mission, you know, we're Title 32. When we're on federal, we're Title 10. You know, Title 32, the governor's is the commander in chief. When we go Title 10, you know, the president is the commander in chief. And so we have to operate in both of those spheres.
Wow. Wow. Well, General, I'm going to try to bring it close to home. I know we've been talking a lot about what's happening at a federal level, more of a macro level. You are retired from the North Carolina National Guard, but you have not retired from community service. You're still very active. You just got reelected in the town of Kernersville as an alderman. So congratulations on victory in that race. Thank so you. You've held all this, you've held significant authority in uniform, and now you serve in local government. How has that shifted your understanding of leadership?
I mean, not much, because I've always been a servant leader. You know, like I said, you know, in the military, you know, our two primary missions are, you know, accomplishment of the mission and the welfare of our soldiers, you know. And so I take that same stance when I, you know, in the position that I hold right now as the Mayor Pro Tem of Kernersville, you know, I'm concerned about the welfare of all our citizens, you know, in Kernersville in particular. I mean, we're a very sweet spot. You know, we're located between Greensboro, Winston-Salem, High Point. I call it the hub of the triad. Everything kind of rotate around us. You know, we're close to the airport. We've got road networks coming through here. So we are prime, like I said, in a really sweet spot. And the biggest problem that we have in Kernersville is trying to manage the growth of Kernersville, you know, to try to keep that hometown effect, but at the same time, you know, deal with the growth that's coming in because of our location. And it's very challenging, but it's something that I've really enjoyed over the last 4 years. So I'm on my third term now. And but, you know, I'm all about trying to do what's right for Kernersville holistically and trying to be forward thinking and try to look down the road to see what's coming and try to, you know, get great information from all sources so we can make great decisions.
You know, I always call Kernersville the heart of the triad. I think it's just, you know, right there in the center of the body. And, you know, it's pumping all throughout the region. Thank you for clarifying. I was unaware that you're the mayor pro tem, but congratulations on that as well. So you were one of the highest vote getters in this last election cycle. Now, I'm not going to tell my audience the full story because you and I, we're friends in private, too. But you were a little nervous about this particular race, and you and I had talked about it last year.
Yeah,
and, made some changes and made the race partisan for my audience. And you can go do this research on your own. For my audience, General Gorham was a Republican. Couldn't really live with some of the changes in the party. Decided to change his party affiliation and is now a Democrat. Ran as a Democrat for re-election last year, and you won. Mm-hmm. How did that make you feel, General?
I was totally elated and very surprised. You know, I was hoping, you know, that with the work I've done, the relationships that I've built, that the citizens of Kernersville will see the effect of what I have, the progress or that we've made on our board. We had a great team and we still have a great team. And we have done a lot of positive things in Kernersville. And I was hoping that at the local level, that the people would look at our track record and not our party, you know. And so, but, you know, based on the reputation of Kernersville and how people have voted in the past, you know, yeah, I was a little bit concerned, you know, when I registered, you know, when I went to sign up, you know, to run again, you know, that I registered, I was shown as a Democrat, and I did not know how that was going to be received in Kernersville. But it turned out extremely well for me and whatnot. And I think for a large part, it might have, because we were partisan this time, people knew who they were voting for. You know, it could have, you know, made the difference in the race. You know, I don't know all the intricate details that caused the vote to turn out the way it did. I'm thankful that it did, and that allows me another 2 years to try to, make good decisions for the town that I love so well.
Well, as I always like to say, the people wanted Saul, but God gave him David.
So, I'll take that.
Sometimes things go a different way. They go the other way.
Yeah.
I do want to go back to something, though, because we, you know, I talk a lot of politics on this show. And, you know, you and I, we talk a lot of politics offline. Republican Party has definitely shifted and changed quite a bit since when you and I first met so many years ago. And I struggle sometimes, General, to really know what the party is about any longer. And I struggle oftentimes to figure out if I even have a place in the party any longer with some of the changes that have occurred. How did you come to that decision? And I know you're a man of conviction and loyalty. Mm-hmm. How did you come to that decision? I know that wasn't an easy decision for you to make to switch your party affiliation.
Well, I mean, it just came down to basic principles, you know, and, things that I believe in personally, you know, and what I was seeing in the party didn't agree with my principles and my way of doing things. And so I had to make a change. And so I did. And as of today, no regrets, you know, And I'm hoping that, you know, things will continue to go in our favor, and maybe that hopefully in 26 we can win at the federal level, and you know, in the House and the Senate, you know, and maybe help balance things out a little bit better than what they are right now.
Yeah, no, I do think we need some change in Congress. And from an audience, you know, go do your own research on Brigadier General J.R. Gorham. And this is a gentleman that actually worked in the McCrory administration. So when I say that he was a Republican, not just a registered Republican, but an actual working Republican. And I think the shift that he just described speaks very largely to what's going on in the Republican Party. Also, if you listen to the conversation that I had with John Hood last week, John said it very eloquently. All the lights are blinking red for Republicans right now, and not in a good way. And I think this story sort of symbolizes what's occurring right now within the party. You know, General, not too long ago, President Trump recently said in a New York Times interview that civil rights led to white people being very badly treated. You know, as a military leader and as a Black American, if you had an opportunity to have a conversation with President Trump, what would you share with him?
I cannot understand why he would make a statement like that. You know, our white brothers are in control of every institution in our country. We control everything, you know. Brown folks don't control anything for the most part. They're players, but small players, you know. All the decision making and whatnot at the very top of every institution in our country is manned by our Caucasian brothers, right? And so for him to make a statement like that, I can't, in my way of thinking, you know, where we've always struggled just to be accepted. You know, I know from my own personal experience, from the military as well as corporate America, you know, when I came in those organizations in the 70s, you know, in order to move up, right, I learned very quickly that I had to assimilate. I could not integrate. I had to assimilate. I was expected to look like, act like, talk like, think like, you know, like the majority. And if you didn't, you wasn't easily accepted. Moving up the chain to higher positions and whatnot, it was going to be a hard road to hoe. And so I had to adapt, you know, to be accepted. I had to get in and fit in where I could get in, you know. And that was a trying thing, you know. And I remember when I first came to the bank, you know, I didn't understand, you know, a lot of things about the bank, you know. But I had a mentor who pulled me to the side and, you know, and told me those types of things that doesn't show up in no manual. Okay. Those things that you encounter, you know, when you're in these different types of environments. And so, you know, I had to adapt, and I had to, I'm not saying that it was, I did not see myself as selling out. I'm just seeing myself as trying to fit in where I could so that I could continue to move up the line, you know, and be promoted and be accepted. And that was difficult, you know. And, you know, I oftentimes ask my white brethren, you know, do you think you would be as successful as you are if you had been Black?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And how would the history books read if we wrote it? Something to think about.
Wow.
You know, there would have been a lot of differences there, you know, because, you know, I see things different because of my experience and my environment, you know. And so that's one of the things that I think that I bring to the board, you know, in Kernersville, the diversity part. You know, I see things a little bit different, you know, because of my background and the environment in which I grew up in, you know. And I think that's helpful, you know, to have diversity you know, and I'm glad that I'm in a position that I am today, you know. And so when you're in leadership, you have to be intentional about what you do. Now, when I was in the business world, okay, and I took customers out, right? And you're in the restaurant business, right? I never even considered to invite one of my white brethren, right, to a black restaurant. Hmm. But now that I'm on my own, right, when I invite somebody out to dinner, to lunch, guess where we going?
Stephanie's.
Yeah, Stephanie's. Yeah, district, you know, taste of the triad, right? Yeah. And I do that intentionally so I can expose them to our culture, you know, because like I said, you know, when I came to Kernersville, right, you know, the first day was uneventful. Okay. The second day, right, guy came in and said, hey, I hear y'all got a new city exec. He said, yeah, that's Mr. Gorham in the office. And you know what I said? Well, I'm closing all of my accounts. Did not say a word to me, right? Just closed all his account based on the color of my skin, okay? And so at the end of the day, they told me what had happened, and I went home defeated, and I had to pump myself up and come back for that third day. And the third day, right, a guy came in just before lunch, okay? And he said basically the same thing, but instead of closing his account that day, he said he was coming back the next day to close all his accounts. And when he left, my customer service rep immediately came to my office and told me what happened. And when she told me, I said, who is this guy and what does he do? And she said, he's one of the biggest tobacco farmers in our area. I said, really? I said, where is his farm? She gave me the address to his farm. I went straight to his farm. When I got to his farm, I got out of my car. He was getting out of his pick-em-up truck. And he's walking towards me. I'm walking towards him. And he's looking at me kind of under-eyed, like, what are you doing out here on my property? And I extended my hand, introduced myself. And I said to him, how many acres of backer you tending? How many buck bones you having? How many stick bones you having? How many pounds you getting to the acre, right? I'm talking his language. But you know what I did, Ezra? I invited myself into his world, and he invited me into his office, and we sat down and we had a meaningful conversation, right? And you know what? He didn't close none of his accounts. Mm-hmm. And over the next year and a half, from conversation that he and I would have from time to time, I informed him that I had never met a collard green that I did not like. And one Friday, I'm sitting at the bank, and he called me, and he said, JR, I've been down to Bethel this week picking up some farm equipment. And while I was down there, I picked up a mess of collard greens, and I would be honored if you and your family would come to my house on Sunday and have dinner with my family. Now, Elginon, I was blown away, right? I didn't expect that, okay? Because you got to understand, I'm a black guy from Eastern Raleigh, down east, right? Who grew up in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, right? You know, black people didn't go into prominent white folks' houses, okay? No, didn't do it, right? And this guy, he ain't telling me to meet me down at a local diner. He invited me into his house in a very intimate setting. His family, my family, coming together, right? That was huge. And if we could have more of that going on in this world, right? A lot of our problems would go away.
Yeah.
I
totally agree. And when I listened to you, General, I ran out of time. I didn't want to stop you because I love that story. You've told me that story before, and I want to hear it as well.
Yeah.
And you remind me so much of my grandfather, because my grandfather came up during a time where this country did not love him and made it very clear that they didn't love him. But I will tell you that my grandfather absolutely loved America.
Yeah.
And he constantly would remind me that this is the greatest country on earth, that we are so blessed, so fortunate. It was an absolute miracle that we lifted our eyes within this country. And I think that's why, and to my audience, that's why General Gorham And if you follow my content, I know most of you do. That's why we're so concerned about what we're seeing right now, because I think when you look amongst African-Americans, we are by a long shot, some of the most patriotic people in this country. We love this country. We
absolutely
this country. We sacrifice for this country.
Yes.
And we are very concerned when you look out and seeing this country being dismantled and the institutions and freedoms being dismantled in the way they are right now. So we've all got to stay locked in and make sure we stay focused on what's occurring right now in Washington. General, a trip to Locked In would not be complete if you did not plug your book. So real quick, because I'm out of time, tell them a little bit about the book.
Sharecropper's Wisdom, Growing Today's Leaders the Old-Fashioned Way. The wisdom of a seventh grade educated sharecropper, my father. The wisdom that he shared with me in that old raggedy smoking Silverado pickup truck that I was so ashamed of then, but I'm so proud of now, because the wisdom that he placed in me as he rolled me around in that old raggedy truck helped me to become the man that I'm becoming, because God is not through with me yet. And if you would like to get a copy of this book, right? Hey, go to my website, www.sharecropperswisdom.com, or give me a call. I like talking to people, right? Give me a call at 336-813-5111 or email me at gorham1@aol.com. And we'll make sure we can get an autographed book to you with a word of wisdom in it. Okay. And if you need a dynamic speaker to come to speak in any of your organization, hey, give me a call. I have a dynamic message for dynamic people. You know, it's all about leadership. Everything rises and falls on leadership. So stay locked in with my brother Elgin, because he is all about leadership too. Thank you.
General J.R. Gorham, thank you for a grounded and necessary conversation. These are not abstract questions. They're real, and they affect how people experience safety, freedom, and trust. To our listeners and viewers, if conversations like this matter to you, please consider supporting this work. Visit lockedin.cash and become a supporter. Independent dialogue only survives when people choose to sustain it. My name is Algernon Cash. You are locked in. Thank you for joining us. Make sure you stay tuned to WTOB, because every Sunday morning, that's where you can lock in with me. But if you happen to miss me there, hopefully you're subscribed to the podcast. You can get that on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you like to get your favorite podcast. You can always lock in there. And until next time, y'all stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WGC. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.